Thanks for checking out the podcast of the Church at Lake Travis. If you have any questions about our church, visit us online at churchlt.com.
Good morning. Are you glad to be here today? Yeah, awesome, awesome. Good to see you. Shout out to Rebecca for doing announcements today. Didn't she do a great job just telling us a little bit more about what's going on in our kids' lives over there and how we can do a better job as families? And she and Charlie are rock stars. They do an amazing job in our kids' ministry, and we're so grateful for them. Our whole team really does a phenomenal job. We got to spend a couple of days together over the past week, and we just were planning and praying for you guys and saying, how can we serve you better, and how can we see the potential of our church reached through you all. So thank you for being here. Thanks for being a part of this church. If you are visiting with us today, I want to add my welcome to Rebecca's. My name's Jeremy, and I'm the lead pastor here, and I want to say thank you for visiting with us. If you don't mind, please let us know you were here by filling out that connection card. Drop it in the faith box on your way out today. The faith boxes are those little black boxes right at the back of the room, by the way. If you are visiting, you wouldn't know that, so I want to tell you. And I always like to do this, and here, let me just give you a little preview. So I like to have all of you that are part of the Church of Lake Travis welcome all of our guests as part of a vision for the future, because here's what I envision in the future. I envision like 6 campuses of the Church at Lake Travis, and when we welcome our guests, we're welcoming every campus. All right, y'all ready? Yeah? Okay, so let's welcome our guests today. Let's do that. Yeah. Woo! Just coming up, our Christmas impact offering is coming up in a couple of weeks on December 16th. And one of the ways that we're going to use that offering is to launch our first Church at Lake Travis campus, which is going to be an online campus, which is super exciting. And that will give us an opportunity to reach outside the walls, maybe to people who would never, ever step foot in the doors of a local church, and especially people who don't want to walk 150 yards uphill to get up to the doors here, right? So thank you for making that trek, and thank you for being here today. We are continuing this series called Be Rich 2.0, and we got this idea from a church in Atlanta, Georgia, North Point Community Church, who kind of started this about 7 or 8 years ago, where they said, look, we're an affluent church. We're an affluent church with lots of influence in the world. And so how can we kind of mobilize the church to do and be what the church was mobilized to be and do? So we kind of just followed on their footsteps, and we know that we live in an affluent community. In fact, the Lake Travis community is the second most affluent community in the Austin suburban community, Westlake being number one, Lake Travis being number two. So we know that, and if we are rich, then what are we supposed to do with that? Well, 1 Timothy chapter 6 tells us what we're supposed to do. In fact, Timothy is the pastor of the local church there, and when Paul is instructing Timothy on how to pastor his church, he says these words. He says, command those that are rich in this present age, like those people who are affluent, those people who do have influence, those people, that's you and I tell my kids all the time, we are rich, whether you think it or not, we are very wealthy, just simply by virtue of our geography, where we live. He says, command those that are rich in this present world to do good, to do good. That's pretty important. Like, how do we do this thing called being rich? How should we live? Well, here's how you do it. Do good. And here's where the series title comes from. Be rich in good deeds. To be rich in good deeds, that is, to be generous and to be sharing with everyone that you come in contact with. So that's where this whole series came from. The first week we talked about how to give more, and we said, you know what, we're going to give you a little tool to do that. And we passed out these little cards that we called acts of kindness cards. And we said, if you have extra, then we encourage you to use that extra to help someone else and to simply give them an act of kindness, love on them. And it simply says something extra to show you that God loves you. And on the back it says, and so do we. If you didn't get one of those, you can grab one on your way out there at the table where the bulletins are. The second week, last week, Lee talked about how we could share and how important it is that when you have extra, that we share. In fact, someone told me this week that verse that Lee shared on this past week, that if you have two coats, that you should give one away, like really impacted them to the point that they went home last Sunday and cleaned out their closet and took it to the thrift store. Okay, like this is practical stuff for us rich people. Now, you may be here and you may not think you're rich. You may consider yourself to be, maybe you're a student and you think, I don't have any money, but you're rich, okay? You live in a house that has a bed that doesn't have a dirt floor, like you are rich. And in fact, I'll just say today after church, if you have any questions of whether or not you're rich or not, you should go to the Ruatan interest party, because that will give you some ideas about whether or not you're rich or not, because you'll get to see some people that really are in need. So I encourage you to do that. So that was last week's share. This week, we're talking about love. Love. Everybody say, aw. A few years back, I went to this kind of personal development, self-discovery weekend, and I went to this weekend and really had no kind of preconceived ideas about what it was going to be about or how I was going to be affected by it. However, I went to this weekend and it really became a life-changing experience for me, because for years I had struggled with anger. And I was like, oftentimes I would go through these seasons and I would just literally, like, my wife would say, like, you get this just almost evil look in your eyes. Like, I would go into these fits of rage, like, just blow up and yell and scream. And that was a struggle of mine for years and years. And so I go to this weekend and I attend this event. And there's all these different exercises that you go through. And it was in this one particular event that I realized that all of the anger that I had in my heart was specifically related to my dad not being around when I was growing up. And as I realized that, I realized I can't be angry and loving at the same time. I can't be angry and loving at the same time. And so I said, you know what, I almost held anger like a pet. Like, it was my anger. Like, I had my anger issues, right? Like, and I just held on to that. And it was kind of this thing that I had become attached to because I had struggled with it for so long, or it's my anger struggle. And it was at that event that I realized I cannot own this any longer. I have to release it. I've got to release it, but I can't simply release it. Something else has to take its place, or else it's just going to come right back. And so if I'm going to release something bad, then I want to receive something good. And so I said, you know what? I want to release anger and I want to receive love, because I don't want to be angry. I want to be loving. And so from that moment forward, it was almost like this weight had been lifted off my chest, and I no longer felt this anger, and I felt love towards people in a way that I had never felt before. How about for you? What is it that you can't be at the same time and be loving? Is it can't be selfish and loving, can't be rude and loving, can't be prideful and loving, can't be impatient, careful, and loving? What is it that you can't be loving and that thing fill in the blank at the same time? I would say for those of us in the room who are in this rich category, maybe that word is entitled. You can't be entitled and loving at the same time. And the story we're going to look at from the life of Jesus today is a story where we will see Jesus as having the opportunity to have the utmost entitlement, and yet he does something drastically different than what we would expect. And I'll just say, if the church can get this right, if the church can get this right, if Christians will embody this message that Jesus demonstrated, then the world, the city of Austin, the state of Texas, the nation, the world might never be the same. Because here's what happens in the 13th chapter of John. And I'll just kind of give you a little brief update. If you have a Bible, you can turn there. John 13 is where we'll be today. And there's this tradition in Jewish history. If you know your Bible, you might know this story. And if you're ever kind of going through the Bible with your kids in nighttime reading, you might not want to read this story because it's a little bit eerie. It's a little weird. But the reality is it happened. And what happened was, in Jewish history, at one point in history, they were slaves in Egypt. And God told them that they were to take the blood of an animal and put it over the doorpost of the house. And if they put it over the doorpost of the house, then the death angel... This is all kind of spooky, right? Kind of a little eerie. But if the death angel would pass over their house and not kill their youngest child. Now, that's all a little bit bizarre. But for centuries after that event happened in Jewish history, the Jewish people would celebrate that event. And we know it to be the Passover event. Now, the Passover event is something that Jesus celebrated as well, as he was a Jewish guy. And he modeled this example in the most extreme way. Now, this particular evening, he's about to move into the Passover season, and he's going to have this traditional Passover meal with his followers, his disciples. And in this meal, in this time together, something extraordinary happens. Unfortunately, for you and I probably can't even begin to describe the emotion that was in the room. Like, any kind of tension that we might have in the room today, because we don't feel like we're rich, or we don't feel like, or maybe we do know we're rich, and we're kind of like, I don't like the church when they talk about money. Like, any kind of tension you feel in the room today doesn't even compare to the tension that was in the room that evening. And so, John chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. It was just before the Passover feast. We're talking about the Passover just before that time. And Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. So he knows, like, my time is coming to an end. Here I go. I'm about to leave this world and go to the Father. And then it gives this phrase, and I think it's so interesting. It says, having loved his own who were in the world, he now loved them to the end. I have an older translation of the New International Version of the Bible. And in this translation, I love the way it's worded. It says, having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. If you're reading that for the first time, all of a sudden, like, you should lean in. Like, this story is getting good. So, you know, this is the scene that's about to happen. He's going to show them the full extent of his love. And then here's where the story gets rich. John chapter 13, verse 2. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. So you know the story. Judas betrays Jesus, and that's already in motion, and that's already happening. All of that's beginning to happen. Then John tells us this, John 13, verse 3, Jesus knew. I want us to pause right there and just consider that word, Jesus knew. It was almost as if Jesus had this clairvoyant moment where all of a sudden he realizes this huge truth, this amazing forethought. I don't know if he didn't know it before or if he is just now coming into it, but all of a sudden it's like it becomes an epiphany, and he has this idea that comes into his mind that he now knows this huge truth that the Father had put all things, that God had put all things under his authority. Your translation may read, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. I want you to think about this. In this moment, it is amazing what's happening. Jesus is in the room with his followers, and everybody's kind of talking in the room, and maybe somebody's talking about, oh, this food sure is good, and maybe somebody's talking about the weather and what's it going to be like tomorrow and all of this. And Jesus looks around the room and he's overwhelmed with this sense in this moment that he's in charge, that God has placed all things under his authority. And he realizes that he's not only the most powerful person in the room. He realizes he's not only the most powerful person in the city. He's not only the most powerful person in the country, in the nation, but he's the most powerful person not only in the world, but in the universe. And so what do you do whenever you realize that you're the most powerful person in the universe? What do you do when you realize that you have all authority, that you have all the riches in the world, that you have all the authority and all the influence and all the power? What do you do in that moment? And then we get to verse 4 and we see this little important word, so. So is such an important word because so is the hinge. It's the hinge between this dawning of this moment when Jesus realizes this authority has been given to me, and then what he does next is unprecedented. He got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing. When it says he took off his outer clothing, essentially what it was saying is Jesus is a rabbi, and Jesus wore a piece of clothing that indicated that he was a rabbi. So he would go into a city, and when he was in that city, everybody would be like, oh, there's a rabbi, there's a rabbi, there's a rabbi. A rabbi was a Jewish teacher. And so they would go in, and everybody would wave, and oh, geez, that guy knows what he's talking about. Like, he's a person of authority. Jesus takes off that symbol of authority, and then he took off that outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. And at that moment, there are many different emotions in the room because they realized what he was about to do. They realized that he had gone from rabbi to servant simply by taking that robe off and putting the towel on. Some men in the room probably thought, oh man, dang it. I should have thought of that. Some people in the room might have thought, someone should have thought of that. Others in the room thought, I don't know what he thinks he's about to do, but he's definitely not going to do that to me. And Peter specifically opens his big mouth, and he's fond of doing that. Peter opens his big mouth, and he said, there's no way you're going to do that. And do you know what Jesus did in the moment that he realized that he was the most entitled person in the room? Do you know what he did? He became a servant. Check it out, verse 5 and 6. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet. This is always an emotional passage when I read it. I don't know if you've ever had your feet washed before as a display that someone is serving you, but it's incredibly humbling. And in this moment, Jesus pours water into a basin and begins to wash his disciples' feet, taking the towel, drying their feet that was wrapped around him. And he came to Simon Peter and he said, Lord, are you going to wash my feet too? In other words, seriously? Seriously, Jesus? You're going to, with those hands, you're going to wash my feet? I've seen what you've done with those hands. Like, you've done the miraculous with those hands, Jesus, and I'm not worthy. I saw you take mud in or spit in the and make mud with your hands and pat it up into a patty cake and put it on people's eyes that were blind, and all of a sudden they can see. I saw you take those hands and lay it on one of our friends when they were sick, and they were raised to health, and they got up and they began to wait on us and cook us a meal and serve us. I saw those hands do that. I saw those hands whenever you took loaves and of bread and multiple fish, and you broke them and you fed thousands of people. Those hands, Jesus, you're going to take those hands and touch my feet? I don't think so. Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I'm doing, but later, you'll understand. In other words, men, you simply think I'm doing what you didn't hire someone else to do, but you think I'm simply doing what you think I should do. You think I'm simply doing something that's customary, but what I'm doing is way, way bigger than that. Verse 12, when he had finished washing their feet, and this is so powerful, don't miss it, he put on his clothes and he returned to his place. So in this moment, there's this Jesus the rabbi, Jesus the teacher. He takes off his authority as a rabbi, puts on the garb of a servant, then takes off the garb of a servant and puts on the garb and the mantle and the robe and the authority as a rabbi. And it's silent in the room. Nobody's eating. Nobody's saying a word. And then he asked them this question. Do you understand what I've done for you? To which no one answers out loud, at least, because they have done that before and insert foot into mouth. Like, you don't do that. Like, you're gonna get it wrong. When Jesus asks a question, you're probably not gonna get the right answer when you answer it. And so, just because you told us we don't really understand what's going on, we're not gonna answer. And Jesus, we've been around you long enough to know. And he says, do you understand what I've done for you? And this is so huge. He says, you call me teacher and Lord, and essentially he's saying, I'm entitled to those positions. I deserve those things. You call me teacher, and that's what you should call me. You call me Lord, and I've never said, oh, no, not Lord. Like, no, don't call me that. He goes on, he says, I am the Lord, I am the teacher. You should call me these things. These are titles, and that's the level of respect that I'm entitled to. Verse 13, rightly so, for it is what I am now that I, verse 14, your Lord and teacher. He doesn't dispute those titles. Have washed your feet. You also should wash one another's feet. I've set for you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I showed you the full extent of my love. Even though I am in the highest place of authority, the highest position of anybody here in the room, anybody in this city, anybody on this planet, even though I have that authority, I showed you the full extent of my love. I set for you an example at any moment, at any place in time, when it dawns on you that you're entitled, I've set for you an example. If you ever wonder, what should I do with this entitlement that I have? What should I do with the blessing of being born in the United States, of being living in the state of Texas with one of the best economies in the United States, and living in one of the most affluent communities in the state of Texas? What should I do? If you ever wonder what you should do, you should look to Jesus, who says this entitlement of money, this entitlement of influence, this entitlement of power, this entitlement of possession, if you ever wonder what you should do, here's what you should do. Verse 15, I've set for you an example that you should do as I have done for you. You should love more. When you think you've loved, no. It's a step farther. When you think you've loved and given your clothes, no, it's a step farther. These are our marching orders Jesus gives us. You don't have to be a Bible scholar, hopefully, to understand this story. He could not have made it more clear for us as the people in the room that day or the people in the room today. The question is not what are you entitled to, it's what will we do with what we've been entitled to. Jesus says, I've set for you an example. I went beyond teaching. I've set for you an example. You look for a way to leverage what you have with what you've been entitled to for the sake of those who are less entitled. That should be the reputation of the church and the community, that we're known for being the most loving people in the world. When people think of church, they should think, I really don't know if I believe what they believe. I really don't know why they're here, but I'm glad they're here in this community. I really not sure if I believe all of that Jesus stuff, but I hope my daughter marries one. I hope my son works for one. I like to hire them, and I don't necessarily embrace all that theology, but I'm telling you what, the more you give those people, the more that they turn it around and they invest back into other people around them. There's nothing better than a rich Christian. Like, nothing. Because they're so loving. They're so giving. And he goes on, verse 16, and he says these words, I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him, even though sometimes we think we are. Verse 17, now that you know these things, you will be blessed, not if you believe them, not if you study them, not if you do a exegetical word study, you theologize them, not if you shout them off a mountaintop, not if you do a sermon series on them. Nope. What do you, How will you be blessed if you do them? Like, love is a verb. It's an action. It's not something we talk about. It's something we act upon. If you ask the question, what should I do with what I am entitled to? He says, you'll be blessed. The world will be blessed. People around you will be blessed and changed. How? Skip down to verse 34. Here's how. He gives us these new marching orders for believers. He says, a new command I give you today, love one another. This isn't the first time he's ever said love one another. He said that back earlier when someone said, what's the greatest command? Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, your strength. And then the second is like it, love your neighbor as much as you love yourself. But now Jesus says, after I washed your feet, the game has changed. I've set for you a new example. And here's what the example is. As I have loved you, that's the kind of love that you're to love one another with. And they loved more. Those guys in that room set a fire in the first century that has been burning ever since with love. The first century Christians went around picking up babies who had been abandoned on the riverside and adopting them and raising them. They went into cities where the plague was killing everybody, and they nursed people back to health at the risk of their own lives. They loved and they gave and they loved and they gave. And then something radical happened around the third century, and Christianity had become so powerful because this power of love and this ethic of love was so strong. Christianity is known now in the third century as better than paganism. And a whole empire turned upside down. Not because of preaching and not just because of teaching, but because of the kind of loving generosity that you and I have an opportunity to be a part of. The first week I talked about, we said, let's be rich. Let's give more. And we said, go out and show this community how much you love them. Give them an act of kindness card. Second week, we said, share more. We talked about two specific partnerships that we have that we can do more when we do it together. One partnership is Community First Village. We're going to be going out there coming up Christmas Eve, and Rebecca mentioned that, and we encourage everybody, if you haven't signed up for that, that's an all-hands-on-deck event. It's going to be about 4 hours of your time, and it will be the best 4 hours that you spend all month of December. It's an opportunity for us to do good together. And then Partners in Hope is another local ministry that we partner with that has something on the third Saturday of every single month. It's a way for us to build relationships with people here in our community who are in need. Lee talked about those last week. I want to talk this morning and share about a partnership that we have that I want to invite you to get involved with. And before I do, let me just pause here for a minute and say, you may be saying, but, you know, is that the only practical application for me, like that I do something and get involved with one of these partnerships? And I would say, if you heard that today, then you missed the whole point of this message. Like, love one another as I have loved you is a sacrificial kind of love that Jesus wants us to have for everyone. Husbands, love your wives sacrificially. Wives, love your husbands sacrificially. Parents, love your children sacrificially. Students, love your parents sacrificially. Employers, love your employees sacrificially. Is this relevant? Absolutely, it's relevant. Because what we begin talking about here, and we mobilize you into the workplace and into your neighborhoods and into your schools as people who are activated by the love of Christ to share that love with other people. Wow, what God wouldn't do through a group of people who are motivated like that. So, is this practical? Absolutely. And one partnership that you can get involved with on a quick, immediate basis is Austin Disaster Relief Network. You all know, it's no surprise, we had a massive flood that happened here in the Highland Lakes chain just recently. We have families in Spicewood and in Graveyard Point who are still reeling from the effects of that disaster. Austin Disaster Relief Network meets people right where they are. Back in 2005, when Hurricane Katrina hit, it's estimated that 450,000 churches rushed into New Orleans and Mississippi and all of that region that was hit so badly. And the church was on the ground before Red Cross, before any other agencies were allowed to be in. The church was making a difference. Some people have said the church shines brightest in the wake of disaster. Austin Disaster Relief Network equips, trains, and empowers local churches to do that kind of work. 14 families, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, there are 16 families. There's still 14 families who were affected by the floods who want someone. Like, listen, they want a local church. They want someone from a local church to come alongside them and walk them through this tragedy that they've experienced. 14. I believe there's at least one, maybe two, people here who would say, sign me up. I will shepherd a family. I will extend love to them in their time of need. I believe that. And if that's you, then there's a training tomorrow night, December 3rd, at the Austin Disaster Relief Network's headquarters, and we can get you all that information. You just let us know, yes, I'm interested, and you can go and learn and be trained. Now, here's what I would say as the band comes. I had a 5.5 minute video to share about Austin Disaster Relief Network, but I'm not going to share that with you today. I will post it on our Facebook page. How about that? You go watch it there and learn more about Austin Disaster Relief Network. Here's what I would say is all acts of love that are motivated out of some kind of guilt or shame. I think it's what we started with. You can't have guilt and shame and love at the same time. I think you got to get rid of that. Receive the love of God in Christ Jesus. What did Jesus do? What kind of love did he have for you and I? We said it the first week. I'll say it again. An extravagant kind of love. A love that said, I'm not going to just wash your feet, but I'm going to go to the cross for you. And I'm going to lay down my life, my desires, my plan, everything that I want. Father, not my will, but yours be done, Jesus said. That's the kind of love that motivates, that inspires. I don't do good because I'm trying to please God. God's pleased with me. He showed me that when he died on the cross for me. God's pleased with me. And so I do good because he's pleased with me, not so that I can be pleasing to him. Is that good news? Does that free anybody here today? I hope that's freeing for you. And I hope that when you come to receive communion today, that you remember that I don't do acts of service, and I don't do good, and I don't love more because of any guilt or shame, because the guilt and the shame was nailed to the cross, and I'm free in Jesus' name.
Thanks again for listening to our podcast. Our mission is to lead people into a life-giving relationship with Jesus Christ, and our prayer is that you are closer to Jesus as a result of listening today.